plate a potential nugget.
And if we could stay with that, Tarun, you said, right, you looked at people who've run the marathon, proverbial marathon. What have you seen about how they've sort of managed to stay energized around the cause over the long term? Anything that you notice them do to replenish themselves or refresh that why? Any empirical observations there?
I mean, the only thing that comes to mind, Deepak, is that there's a inevitable sense of sort of a deep commitment to partnerships of all sorts. Partnerships in the sense that I spoke about in my earlier work on trust, where you build out the ecosystem collectively with others because you're compensating for institutional weaknesses that are endemic in developing countries. That's one kind of partnership. In the book, we have a variety of stories from Rosario Bozan in Colombia, this amazing agribusiness entrepreneur, Jaime Ayala in Manila, Patrick Shaloub in the Middle East, James Mwangi in Kenya, and a whole host in India that would be more familiar to your listeners, Nanda and Kiran Devi, just to take three Bangaloreans. And they're all collectively creating ecosystems. They're building the institutions as they go along, right? And those institutions, of course, are helping build their individual enterprises, but they're also leaving residues of institutions behind so that others can free ride on those efforts. And that's what it takes. So they're not small-minded to say, oh, I'm not going to build this because most of the benefits will accrue to society. They just do it because there really isn't an alternative. The alternative is to wait for the state, and the state takes a while to get around to these things, given the reality of political economies in these countries. So there is that sense of partnership. But there's also, the book starts with a chapter on families. And it just turns out that, by the way, this is true in the US also, but more so in developing countries, I think, that almost all these enterprises have a deep sense of family as a stabilizing mechanism behind the entrepreneur. So I often say in my own entrepreneurial journeys or when I'm working with my students or counseling them one way or another, I always ask them, do you have a safety net if you're going to be an entrepreneur? Because it's a rough and tumble kind of existence, and it's a lonely business, actually. But when I say safety net, I mean two things. The easier safety net is the financial safety net. If you have a good idea, capital will often find a way to you. But also a psychological safety net. Maybe a spouse, maybe an extended family, maybe a network of friends, something like that. And you find that in the chapter on families. We start the book with that because families to us just loom large in not all the stories, but in most of the stories. That there's a subtext that the family is. Not that the family is only positives. Anyone who's in a large family knows that there are lots of negatives in any family. But people have learned to manage the downsides while accentuating the positives. Rahul Bhai just passed away, unfortunately. Rahul Bajaj, and he had a nice quote in there on this, just saying that, the brothers in a family are like the fingers on a hand. They're not all the same size, have the same capabilities. So you have to be do the right thing for the right person. So I would say the ethos of partnerships in a very big tent sense, all the way from partnering with family members or networks of friends to partnering with the more conventional business partners, to partnering with the state to collectively co-create something.
Tarun speaks about each finger of the hand being different. There are some situations where the family pulls along, but I feel that it's also critical to call out the quality of conflict management, which can often pave the way for extraordinary value creation. Earlier in the podcast, Harsh Mariwala of Marico speaks about how he went through a separation of business but strived to keep the relationships intact during the separation and subsequently as well.
It so happened that there were some issues which led to a lack of trust amongst the family, and I think that forced us to separate. So it was not something which was planned. It happened because of certain circumstances, which was, I never thought it would happen. But when that happened, I thought it better to separate, because if there is no trust, then you can't exist as partners. So that event, those set of events which happened after Marico was formed, immediately after it was formed, the first 2-3 years, led to this situation where we also separated financially. Mm. Any family financial separation is painful. It's because there is some degree of bad blood at that particular point of time. So you have a relationship which is very good at a social level, but that phase, you, because its financials are involved, there tends to be some degree of bad blood. Mm. And then there is a huge degree of uncertainty. What will happen? Will it conclude properly? Will it not conclude? So impact of that on business is another thing. So that could lead to high degree of stress. Number three is, you are managing a business as well as you are doing these negotiations, which are time consuming. So there is that degree of stress. So I would say a combination of uncertainty, stress, and temporary bad relationships, something you need to go through, and there is no other alternative. I think one has to go through. But looking back, I mean, those 2-3 years were painful, were stressful, were taxing. But I think it has paved the way of the relationships are almost back to normal in terms of socially and things like that. And same. I think somebody has to take an initiative in terms of within the family. And normally initiatives start around some events, either sad events or happy events, like a marriage or somebody, you lost somebody in the family. And that is the time when the family tends to unite. Mm. Because these are very important events, either very sad events like a demise or a happy event like a marriage. And that is the time when, you start thinking, okay, now we have to start feeling united. And it, over a period of time, I think it goes on. At least in our case, it improved. In some cases, some families, but I think it takes two to clap. So both parties have to forget the past, let it be bygones, rather than holding on to some event which was a cause of stress at certain point of time. And look at future. And you may not be the best of friends, but the relationship is almost back on track.
Going back to what Tarun says earlier in the conversation, I guess this is where some of the humility of demeanor begins to matter in meaningfully resolving these sticky situations. For more, tune into the conversation with Harsh Mariwala.